From NPR News in Washington, D.C., this is a special report on today's debate in the House of Representatives on a proposed resolution on Iraq. The resolution disapproves of President Bush's decision to send more than 21,500 additional troops to Iraq. I'm Paul Brown. One sharp difference quickly emerged regarding what the war is about. Democrats said Iraq is now in a civil war from which the U.S. needs to extricate itself. Republicans said, as President Bush does, that it is part of a larger global war on terrorism. Tom Lantos is a Democrat from California and chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. He's a sponsor of the resolution, and he favors drawing down the U.S. troop presence as soon as it's practical.
We are not fighting terrorism in Iraq. We are attempting to referee a religiously based civil war which saps our strength and destroys our fabric as a society.
Peter Hoekstra is a Republican from Michigan and the ranking Republican member on the House Intelligence Committee.
There is a fundamental clash of civilizations at work here. There is a fundamental belief by the jihadists that Islam must expand to fill the entire world, or else falsehood in its many guises will do so. This belief includes their fact that democracy, liberalism, human rights, personal freedoms, international law, international institutions are illegal, illegitimate, and sinful.
Joining us now is Ron Elving, NPR's Washington editor. Ron, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure, Paul.
Ron, let's step back for a moment here and talk about what's in the House resolution opposing the troop buildup in Iraq and why it's generating such starkly different responses. First of all, it's very short, fewer than 100 words. I was wondering if you could read it for us.
Yes, I'd be glad to do that. Resolved by the House of Representatives, the Senate concurring, that Congress and the American people will continue to support and protect the members of the United States Armed Forces who are serving or who have served bravely and honorably in Iraq, and Congress disapproves of the decision of President George W. Bush announced on January 10, 2007, to deploy more than 20,000 additional United States combat troops in Iraq.
Pretty straightforward, and it's a non-binding resolution. Now, what does that mean?
It's non-binding means that once they have said it, once they have approved it, and if then the Senate were to concur, as I just mentioned, that is part of the resolution, this would become the official position of the United States Congress. And that's it.
It doesn't mandate the president to do anything.
It can't force the president to change his policy in and of itself. It is only a resolution.
Okay, why is it non-binding then? Why not something more powerful?
Couple of ways to look at that. One is that it's designed to pass. Maximum appeal and minimizing objection. Mm-hmm. Just keep it simple, keep it short, salute the troops, salute a commitment to the troops, and then say, but there is one decision the president has made that we feel is going in the wrong direction. That's all we want to say right now. Let's just see if we can agree on that much.
Okay, well, why does it not go further than, for example, such as proposing to cut off funds for the additional troops being sent in with this so-called surge?
I think eventually there will be serious efforts made to do just that. But let's look at the polls for the moment. Something like 60% of the people in most polls, including a Gallup that just came out today, say they oppose the idea of the surge. They don't want to send more troops. Something over 60% would like to see a timetable for bringing people home. But if you ask people specifically, do you want to cut off the funding for troops that are either there or on their way over there, suddenly the numbers switch. And the opposition goes up to 58%, and the support drops down to 40%. Congress members know how to read polls, and they know that that would be much more difficult to do, and they're going to save that for down the road.
So no matter what their positions on the war itself, they are not going to come up with a proposal like that right now.
They may come up with a proposal. They can't pass it.
Briefly, where is the Senate in all this? The Senate was first to the post in wanting to discuss a resolution, and then it disappeared.
They agreed that they would go first, and the House agreed to step back. But then when they came to the moment where they needed 60 votes to cut off debate under Senate procedures, they couldn't get there because of a party difference. The Republicans and Democrats were differing over how many resolutions would be voted on, how many would be considered, and what would be the threshold of approval. So even though overall, in terms of percentages, the two bodies are probably not that different in their feelings about Iraq and the surge and what we should do next, in the Senate, you just need more votes to overcome the minority. The minority has a lot more rights in the Senate.
Well, let's take a moment to listen to House Speaker Nancy Pelosi of California. She supports this resolution. She became Speaker after last fall's election, bringing Democrats to power largely over public dissatisfaction with the Iraq War.
The American people have lost faith in President Bush's course of action in Iraq, and they are demanding a new direction. On January 10th, President Bush proposed deploying more than 20,000 additional combat troops into Iraq. This week, we will debate his escalation. In doing so, we must be mindful of the sacrifices our military personnel are being asked to make in this war and the toll it is taking on them, on their families, and on our veterans. Each one of us must determine, in a manner worthy of their sacrifice, whether the President's proposal will make America safer, make our military stronger, and make the region more stable. As this debate begins, let us be clear on one fundamental principle. We all support the troops.
That was Nancy Pelosi, the Democratic House Speaker from California. The leader of the Republican minority, John Boehner of Ohio, dismissed the resolution, as did many of his colleagues.
This is a political charade lacking both the seriousness and the gravity of the issue that it's meant to represent. And as I said before, the question before us today isn't actually in this resolution. I think it's much more fundamental. The question is, do we have the resolve necessary to defeat our terrorist enemies? Will we stand and fight for the future of our kids and theirs? And as President Eisenhower once said, history does not long entrust the care of freedom to the weak or the timid. Does Congress have the fortitude to do what needs to be done? Our soldiers do. The men and women of our military are the greatest force for freedom that the world has ever known. They are brave, they are committed, and they can win this fight if we ask them to. I think the big question is, will we support them? My colleagues, the world is watching. The question is, how will we respond?
That was Republican Congressman John Boehner of Illinois, the minority leader. This is an NPR special report on debate on a proposed House resolution on Iraq. I'm Paul Brown, and with me is Ron Elving, NPR's Washington editor. And Ron, both Democrats and Republicans have been calling out a lot of veterans today in support of this resolution. Is that a deliberate strategy?
Absolutely. Both parties want to make clear their position in support of the troops. And so, of course, the Republicans have brought out veterans to talk about how important it is to people in the field to have the feeling that people back in the country are behind them. And the Democrats have trotted out quite a few veterans from several wars, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, highly decorated people in many cases, to say the troops know that back here in the United States, we're debating policy, not whether or not we support the troops and not whether or not we're going to continue to fund them. What we're debating here is a policy change by the Bush administration. One of the people they brought out was Patrick Murphy, a Democrat from Pennsylvania, who was just elected in this last election. And he says he knows about Iraq because he walked there in his own combat boots as part of the 82nd Airborne Division, and he doesn't think this surge is the right answer.
No matter what their opinions, everyone is saying they're patriotic. That's one thing that came through throughout the day. Here's one Army veteran, Republican Representative Duncan Hunter of California. He's seen as a presidential hopeful. Hunter says the resolution is wrong and that it doesn't stop the troop surge, which has already begun.
We're not stopping anything with this resolution. In fact, the Big Red One is already moving its 1st Brigade toward Iraq. The 82nd Airborne, America's All-American Division, is already in Iraq. In fact, they have the 2nd Brigade is already in their sector in Baghdad. As a matter of fact, in the Baghdad plan, which this reinforcements are serving, in all nine sectors now has Americans and Iraqi forces in place and operating. So you're not stopping anything. You're simply sending a message. And it's the wrong message. Because this nation has been, for the last 60 years, involved in spreading freedom, and it's in America's interest to spread freedom. Nobody would say it's in our interest, or it's not in our interest, for example, to have a free Japan on that side of the Pacific, or to have a free El Salvador in our own hemisphere, or to have those nations which were behind the Iron Curtain, nations like Poland, now standing side by side with us in Iraq. It's in our interest to spread freedom.
That was Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter of California. He opposes the resolution disapproving of President Bush's troop surge. Another military veteran who spoke in today's House debate was Democrat Bob Etheridge of North Carolina. He's in favor of the resolution because he's disappointed in President Bush and doesn't feel more American troops are the answer to the problems in Iraq.
I voted to give the president the authority to topple Saddam Hussein's regime in Iraq because he said it presented a grave and gathering threat to America. I took the President of the United States of America at his word. We've learned to our great regret what that was worth. Now the President wants to send 21,000 more troops to Baghdad. Republican Senator Arlen Specter called the new deployment a snowball in July. And outgoing commanders of the Central Command with responsibility for Iraq told the Senate last November, and I quote, "I do not believe that more American troops right now is the solution to the problem. I believe the troop levels need to stay about where they are." And the former Republican chairman of the Senate Armed Services Committee, John Warner, a decorated Marine and former Secretary of the Navy, said last month, "I feel it ever strongly that the American GI was not trained, not sent over there, certainly not by resolution of this institution, to be then placed in the middle of a fight between Sunni and Shia and the wanton and just incomprehensible killings that's going on at this time."
That was Democratic Congressman Bob Etheridge of North Carolina. He's a veteran, and he supports the proposed resolution, which expresses disapproval for a troop increase in Iraq, but does support the troops. We'll hear more from the House debate on this resolution, and we'll talk more with NPR's Washington editor Ron Elving after a short break. You're listening to a special report from NPR News. This is a special report from NPR News on today's debate of a resolution on Iraq in the House of Representatives. I'm Paul Brown. The proposed resolution disapproves of President Bush's decision to send more troops into Iraq, but it expresses support for the troops. It does not advocate a cut in funding for troops. The November election came up during today's debate. Democrat John Conyers of Michigan called on his colleagues to heed the results of the election that brought Democrats to power, largely because Americans were dissatisfied with conduct of the Iraq War. At the same time, Conyers addressed the funding issue.
Last fall, the American people spoke loudly with their votes. We should be here showing the voters that we heard them and that their trust was well placed. The ultimate, unequivocal authority of the Congress is the power of the purse, and so we must use it. Supporters of the president's failed Iraq policy have argued that using Congress's spending power to end the war means that we don't support the troops. It is beyond absurd to suggest that those of us who favor ending funding for the war would simply abandon the troops
in the field expired.
Without equipment and the supplies they need.
That's John Conyers of Michigan. Peter King of New York is the ranking Republican on the House Homeland Security Committee. He said the job of a member of Congress is not simply to do the voter's will. He counseled courage to do what he thinks is the right thing, and that is to reject the resolution and support President Bush's troop increase in Iraq.
We as elected officials have to show some courage and not just give in to the zeitgeist, not just give in to the, you know, the latest public opinion poll or to the latest election, because quite frankly, we weren't elected just to win elections. We were elected to show leadership and to do what has to be done. And you know, when future generations look back at this, will they really say that we helped the struggle against Islamic terrorism by pulling out of Iraq? By not continuing that fight, does anyone really think that that won't embolden Al-Qaeda, that will not embolden Iran? Can anyone honestly say that?
NPR's Washington editor Ron Elving is with me in our studios. And Ron, the election was widely seen as a resounding rejection of President Bush's Iraq policies. The president himself said the Republicans took a thumping. So does it surprise you here that Republicans such as Peter King are saying the responsible thing to do is to ignore the message of the election?
It surprises me a bit to hear people saying it quite so baldly as Representative King did in this particular instance. I can imagine Democrats with a grim smile of satisfaction nodding their heads as they hear Representative King say, "Our job is not to pay attention to public opinion polls or even to elections. Our job is to do what we think is right."
Which the Democrats are now saying that they're doing.
Well, of course, yeah. They think they're doing what is right, but when you look forward to 2008, if you're a Democrat and you hear the Republicans saying we don't care if what we're doing is what the voters want, you've got to feel pretty good about your prospects in the next vote.
What are the latest public opinion polls showing about approval of the president and what Americans want to see happen in Iraq?
The public opinion polls are a little bit divided, a little bit at crosswinds, but a couple of things are clear. We still have in the high 50s, 56-58%, saying they think that it was a mistake for the United States to get into Iraq in the first place. But in a way, that's really not even the question anymore. Whether or not they approve of the way the president is handling the war is not really the question anymore. And that number, by the way, is quite low. It's in the low 30s. It's well under his general approval rate, well under his personal approval rate. Iraq is just about as bad as it gets for him. It's down around 32%. But when you ask people what we ought to do there, then you start to get a little division. They don't like the surge. That's opposed by 60% in the latest Gallup poll, and that number is representative of other major national polls. And they don't like the idea that we're going to be sending any more people into the war, but they do not necessarily want to see us cut off the funding for the people who are either there now or who are on their way there. So when you ask them directly, shall we deny funding needed to send in additional U.S. troops to Iraq, it flips, and you get 58% opposed and 40% in favor of that.
And Democrats are bending over backwards with this resolution to show that they, in fact, do support the troops. It does not cut funding.
They're trying to thread the needle. They're trying to be with the public opinion polls on both of those two issues. Eventually, that's going to get much more difficult. But that's why we're in this non-binding resolution world at this point and not yet grasping the nettle of the challenge of actually cutting off the funds.
Well, if Democrats are rejoicing at the comments of someone like Congressman Peter King, Republicans in the House must already be looking ahead to the next election themselves in 2008. So is it politically dangerous for them to be backing the president regarding the war and opposing this congressional resolution?
I think that quite a few of the Republicans today in their comments made it clear that they think that this is a test of courage, a political profile and courage vote on their part to be with the president, because they saw what happened to many of their colleagues. They saw the increase of Democrats in the chamber by a net of 30. They saw the fact that they couldn't go after any Democrats and no Democrats were defeated. And they're worried about 2008. Now, many of these Republicans in the House have such safe Republican districts that it's really not a concern to them personally that
even with the level of concern about the war.
That's right. Even with that level of concern, most of the Republicans, the overwhelming number of the ones who got reelected last November, are in pretty safe districts. But at the same time, they don't want to see their party pared down any further, and they don't want to give up their chance to get back into the majority in 2008. So they know that they are taking a risk, that this is a political courage vote, and that's why we heard a lot of comparisons to the dark hours of World War II. We heard a lot of comparisons, for example, to Winston Churchill and the position that he took with respect to the Nazis in the 1930s. We heard the suggestion that to pull out of Iraq now would be the equivalent of what Neville Chamberlain did at the Munich conference in 1938, trying to appease the Nazis, that sort of image.
Mm-hmm. An overarching theme today had to do with U.S. mistakes in Iraq, which both Democrats and Republicans said were made, but they had different opinions on what to do now.
This resolution does not make tactical decisions. It reverses a mistaken course. The administration is recommending an acceleration of the wrong course. Our resolution reverses that course. Mr. Speaker, it is too late to go back and make right all that has gone wrong in Iraq. And clearly, carrying on with more of the same will do no good. But the administration has yet to learn that you cannot unscramble an omelet. Instead, it is trying to add to the mix another 21,500 men and women who deserve better than that.
That was Democratic Representative Tom Lantos of California, a sponsor of the resolution debated today in the House of Representatives. Republican Jack Kingston of Georgia acknowledged the Democrats' discomfort with sending more troops, but he worried about the consequences if the U.S. withdraws.
Now, I understand that it's frustrating. I serve, as you do, on the Defense Committee. And as you know, many times we don't get all the information that we want. We have heard, as Mr. Boyd said, generals after general, after admirals, after captains telling us we don't need more troops in Iraq. And now they're saying that they do. We have also heard the president say the decisions for military changes in Iraq would be made in Baghdad, not in Washington, D.C. And I hope that is the case with this situation. I'm very frustrated about it. But one thing we have been told unequivocally by those same generals and admirals and secretaries of the Navy and Army and Secretary of Defense, and today from the ambassador from Jordan and Egypt, is that if America withdraws from Iraq at this time, it is sure to bring chaos and destruction. That will lead to a full-scale sectarian war, which could lead to division. It could be so chaotic that the United States of America would have to return to Iraq in larger force numbers than we have now.
That's Republican Jack Kingston of Georgia. Democrat John Tanner of Tennessee wasn't buying it. And he said the U.S. should be moving out of Iraq if for no other reason than incompetence in the administration of the military involvement there. And once again, he focused on the Democrats' theme of forcing more responsibility on the Iraqis.
Unbelievable reports of the Pentagon can't identify 170,000 guns issued to Iraqi forces in October of 2005. Some of our soldiers buying their own body armor, up-armored Humvees sitting in Bosnia-Herzegovina while we needed them in Iraq. It goes on. And David Walker, the Comptroller General, says he believes that almost 30% of the money spent over there has been wasted, stolen, or otherwise unaccounted for. I think any patriotic American ought to come to this floor if he has the opportunity, he or she, and ask questions of about the incompetency of the Pentagon and civilian leadership thus far. I believe any viable Iraqi strategy to be successful must contain clearly defined goals to hold the Iraqi leaders accountable for their own security.
That was Democratic Representative John Tanner of Tennessee at today's House debate on the Iraq resolution. The resolution expresses disapproval of President Bush's troop increase. Republican Peter Hoekstra of Michigan supports the president's troop surge. He sounded a theme that recurred throughout the day, painting the U.S. fight in Iraq as crucial to what he described as a struggle against Islamist militants bent on regional domination.
This militant Islamic jihadist threat, we must also understand why Iraq is such an important element of their war against the West. This is where the letter from al-Qaeda's number two leader, Zawahiri, to the late al-Zarqawi, outlining the Islamic Caliphate that would stretch from Indonesia across the Middle East and Africa, is instructive. In that letter, Zawahiri outlines a four-stage plan to create this religious empire. Stage one, quote, expel the Americans from Iraq, end of quote. Expel them in defeat. I fear that this debate may be the first step in that process. Stage two is to create an Islamic religious government in the old Mesopotamia that is Iraq, developing it and supporting it until, quote, until it achieves the level of a caliphate, end of quote, until it fills the void stemming from the departure of the Americans. Step three is to extend the jihad wave to secular countries neighboring Iraq. The jihadists will attack heretic Muslims, as they define them. And stage four is the clash with Israel, because Israel was established only to challenge any new Islamic entity.
That was Republican Representative Peter Hoekstra of Michigan. He was one of many Republicans who are casting a U.S. victory in Iraq as essential to defeat of Islamic terrorism worldwide. NPR's Washington editor Ron Elving is with us. And Ron, what do we make of this? Concern about a debacle on the part of Republicans? Do the Democrats risk appearing to be indifferent to the fate of the Iraqis? Do they risk appearing indifferent to the success of what the Republicans call the war on terrorism?
Those are really two quite different questions, because the first one has to do with one country, has to do with roughly 25, 26 million people in one country, and whether or not our presence there is making the situation better. Obviously, it can't be terribly visible because it looks so bad on television, but the Republican case is that things would be much worse if we were to pull out, if our influence, our stabilizing, if we assume it is stabilizing influence, were to be withdrawn. So that's one question. And in the Republican portrait of this, the Democrats do seem quite indifferent to the Iraqis' fate. Then there's the second question, which they've been emphasizing throughout the day, and that is that this is just step one in a tremendous wave of takeover by jihadists, and that they are going to spread out from Iraq and from their other bases here and there and take over the entire Middle East, take over all of the countries where there are Muslims, stretching all the way to the east and up to the north into the former republics of the Soviet Union, former Soviet Union, westward into Africa, and that everywhere where there are Muslims, there is going to be this caliphate, this jihadist empire.
Ron, funding is another issue that came up through the day. Republicans opposed to the resolution have tried to cast a vote for it as a first step to denying funding to troops. Here's Republican Congressman Mike Pence of Indiana.
There is a fundamental difference between pledging to support and protect our troops and pledging not to cut off the funding for our war in Iraq. It is a specious distinction, and one that is not lost on our colleagues in the Senate. I would submit to you that words have consequences, and support and protect does not assure the American people that we will continue to fund our troops in the field.
That's Republican Mike Pence of Indiana. Democrat David Scott of Georgia took offense at any suggestion that backers of the Iraq resolution want the U.S. to back away from involvement in the Mideast.
Now, a lot has been said, and I think it has been misguided, very unfortunate so. Allow me, if I may, to state for the record exactly what this resolution does. There have been talk up here about this resolution's here to cut funds. Nothing could be further from the truth. There's no Democrat in this Congress who would dare cut the funds from our soldiers who are in harm's way. And any member that continues to say that is doing a disservice to this Congress and to the people of the United States. This resolution does not say we're pulling out troops. We know the situation in the Middle East. We know this region is vital to our interest. The issue here is not pulling out troops. The issue here is a vote up or down on a policy that says two things, 57 words.
And those two things are to disagree with the president's troop surge and to support the troops in Iraq. That was Democrat David Scott of Georgia. Ron Elving, are the Democrats using this resolution as a first step to cutting off funding?
That may be not the way that Congressman Scott reads it, but I think some of the Democrats consider it exactly that. They think it's a first step towards stronger measures that would more fully express opposition to the surge. And beyond the surge, then getting down to a smaller core group of the Democrats, if you will, the people who feel we should begin the withdrawal as soon as possible, those people would surely like to go further and say to the president, if we can't get you to reverse your policy, we're going to try to starve this program for funds until we can force a beginning of a withdrawal.
So we have Republicans in today's debates trying to paint Democrats as perhaps not caring about an expanding Islamist empire, and also to paint them as ready to cut funding, even though the resolution does not say that specifically.
And even though they may not have the support they would need for such a move, there will be those who press for it nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. What sorts of things can we look forward to tomorrow in the second day of debate?
I think we're going to see, and perhaps within the early part of the day, we're going to see the sponsors of this resolution, and one of them is a Republican, Walter B. Jones of North Carolina, and we're going to see him on the floor arguing for the resolution as a Republican and bringing out a handful of his colleagues. We don't know exactly how many there will be, but bringing out several Republicans who will also say that while they hate to be on the wrong side of their president and they hate to be this separated from the rest of their colleagues, they themselves support the resolution.
I was actually a little surprised that we didn't hear from any of those Republicans today. Do you think there's any strategy behind that or not?
I think it's a bit of a media strategy, I suspect. Maybe we're flattering ourselves, Paul, but I think their effort today was to put forward veterans and to put forward some of their party leaders, and that tomorrow they'd like to move on to showing that there are Republicans who support the resolution. And in fact, polls show there are some Republicans who do support or, if you will, oppose the surge and support the resolution.
What's the point of this whole debate, given that the resolution is non-binding? Is this, more than anything else, a way for all of the members of Congress, each of whom is given at least 5 minutes to speak, to get themselves on record ahead of the 2008 elections, or is there something more here?
Ahead of the 2008 elections and in the train of the 2006 elections. I think they're showing that they are responsive to that, that they can read a poll, that they understand what the voters were saying in this last election, and that they want to change policy to reflect more what the voters want. And I think that it was a signal, it is a signal from the Democrats, that they're going to go as far as they can to assert their co-leadership in foreign policy.
NPR's Washington editor Ron Elving will be back after a brief break with more on today's debate on an Iraq war resolution in the House of Representatives. I'm Paul Brown, and this is an NPR special report. This is an NPR special report on today's debate in the House of Representatives on a resolution concerning Iraq. The measure, fewer than 100 words long, would put the House on record as disapproving of President Bush's troop increase in Iraq, while at the same time expressing support for the troops. It would not call for denying funding for the troops. NPR's Washington editor Ron Elving is here with us. And Ron, there was discussion of the wider war against militant Islam today. Democrats said invading Iraq undermined the effort to hunt down Osama bin Laden and to bring stability to Afghanistan. Republicans see Iraq as a crucial front in a global war on terror. But beyond the discussion of policy, many members struck a personal note. Here's one, Democratic Representative Charles Rangel of New York, a Korean War veteran, has spoken about possibly reviving a military draft. But he said that hardly makes him heartless. He said a draft might make more Americans think more seriously about the impact of the war on Americans.
You hear talk about me supporting a draft, but I challenge anyone to tell me that their feelings about this war in Iraq would not be different if they thought that their loved ones, their family, their community would be placed in harm's way. Whether you're for or against the war, or no matter how you voted, when you see the casualties mounting up, when you visit the hospitals and see young, dedicated people without their skulls, their faces, their legs, their arms, you don't have to know any of these kids to stop crying. But if you have children and grandchildren and your imagination allows you to believe that they would be included in the 21,000, and no matter how many times they go, there has to be a feeling that maybe this is the last chance I have. You have to have a different feeling if you were not dealing with someone else's children. Now, people would say these kids want to fight. I mean, they're different from most kids. They volunteered. They want to do it. It's strange how most of them sought the 40,000, 30,000, 20,000 bonus, or sought educational benefits, or don't come from families that are fluent in this country. It's strange that you never heard the President of the United States or the Secretary of Defense ever make a plea to the patriotism of America to say, give me your young, your able-bodied, give me your patriots, we got a war to fight.
That's New York Democratic Representative Charles Rangel. On the Republican side, Ileana Ross Layton of Florida took issue with Rangel's description of who's fighting in Iraq.
On this floor, to characterize the decision of our young men and women to join the military as being motivated by money, by bonuses, by other financial benefits, rather than their patriotism. My stepson, Doug, my daughter-in-law, Lindsay, they're both college graduates. Doug is a graduate of the University of Miami. Lindsay is a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy and has a master's in English. They had many opportunities, many, many opportunities they could have pursued. They chose to serve their country because they and many others are patriots. They did not do it for bonuses. They did not do it for money. Let us not just support our troops. Let's support their mission. And their mission is to defeat the Islamic extremist.
That's Florida Representative Ileana Ross Layton. And Ron Elving, this debate today was very, very passionate and very personal at times. What do you make of this?
A number of these representatives were sharing with the body their personal experiences in war and bringing that wisdom or that experience to bear as an explanation for the viewpoint they were taking on this question. Now, for example, you had Sam Johnson, longtime congressman from Texas, who served 7 years in a POW camp in North Vietnam during the Vietnam War. And he said he watched the country turn against that war, and he watched Congress turn against that war and felt quite betrayed while he sat in a POW prison in North Vietnam. That was an emotional moment. Then you had Leonard Boswell, who is a representative from Iowa and a Democrat. Johnson is a Republican. Boswell remembered going off to be a helicopter pilot in 2 tours in Vietnam and saying goodbye to his children, not knowing whether or not he would see them again. And he's on the other side of the Iraq resolution, and he was talking about what we're asking the forces we're sending to Iraq to do now, what sacrifices we're asking them to make, and what are the policy concerns, what are the policy issues behind asking people to do that. So two people with soul-wrenching, searing experiences to tell of their own from Vietnam coming to opposite conclusions about this issue.
Do you think that any of the folks who are telling these stories feel that they might actually sway the votes of someone else in the House? Or is this more perhaps to connect with the American people who may hear parts of the debate, as we just have?
Those two motivations would not necessarily be contradictory or mutually exclusive. I think they certainly do want to change the votes of those that are voting the other way in the body, and I think they have a pretty good idea of where everybody's going to come down on this question late this week, probably on Friday. But they wouldn't mind changing some of those votes. On the other hand, they think that it's probably more likely that they're changing the minds of people who are watching the debate on television.
Many Republicans painted an almost apocalyptic scenario if the U.S. withdraws from Iraq. Congresswoman Sue Myrick of North Carolina, who supports the administration's troop surge, was one of many to hearken back to an earlier war.
In 1938, Adolf Hitler told us what he was going to do, and we refused to pay attention, and we cannot afford to repeat that historical mistake. This is not a Democrat and Republican issue. Our security is an American issue, and I hope we're going to start to act as Americans like the American people expect us and want us to do. We must understand we're fighting the first battles of a war against radical Islamist ideology that will be waged for the next 50, maybe 100 years. Mistakes have been made, and more mistakes will be made in the future. War is never easy, nor is it predictable.
Congresswoman Sue Myrick. Ron Elving, those are pretty strong words from Representative Myrick, talking about a battle for generations to come. Are there any polls that show Americans believe this is a war of the dimension or importance of World War II?
Not that I've seen. There are surely some Americans who feel that way, but particularly that is not the view of those Americans who actually remember World War II or who are old enough to remember even the aftermath of World War II and the resonance of that struggle into the 50s and into the 1960s. I think some younger people, having a little less strong impression of World War II, may see the struggles of our time as being commensurate to those of an earlier time. And I think right after 9/11, there was a tendency tendency on the part of many people to feel that the global war on terror was going to be something that might reach the dimensions of World War II, but we haven't seen that.
Republicans did invoke this image several times through the day. Here's another viewpoint on the same issue. Democrat Patrick Murphy of Pennsylvania has served in Iraq, and he invoked the memory of another war.
You know, a few blocks away from this great chamber, when you walk in the snow, is the Vietnam Memorial, where half the soldiers listed on that wall died after America's leaders knew our strategy would not work. It was immoral then, and it will be immoral now, to engage in the same delusion. That's why, Mr. Speaker, sending more troops in the Civil War is the wrong strategy. We need to win the war on terror, and reasonable people may disagree on what to do. But most will agree that it is immoral to send young Americans to fight and die in a conflict without a real strategy for success. The president's current course is not resolute. It is reckless. That is why I will vote to send a message to our president that staying the course is no longer an option. Mr. Speaker, it's time for a new direction in Iraq.
Democrat Patrick Murphy of Pennsylvania, an Iraq War veteran. And Ron Elving, will the debate continue, do you think, to play out along strict partisan lines with Republicans who see the Iraq War, as President Bush does, as a main front in a wider war on terrorism, and Democrats such as Patrick Murphy who see it as a civil war and a quagmire that distracts the U.S. from other major concerns?
As a debate on the floor of the House, yes, I think it will continue to follow almost perfect partisan lines. Although tomorrow we anticipate there will be a handful, perhaps six or seven Republicans who actually give speeches in favor of the resolution. We may hear a Democrat or two come out and speak against the resolution. That's also possible. But apart from those anomalies, you're going to see pretty much a straight down the line partisan debate. Now, when it comes to the vote on Friday, I think we're anticipating 25, 30 Republican votes for the resolution. So that'll involve a lot of people who did not give a speech in its favor. And it could even be a larger number of Republicans than that.
Let's go back to why we're here for a minute. The resolution opposing the troop increase in Iraq that's already begun. The resolution is non-binding, and the so-called troop surge to help secure Baghdad and Anbar province has already begun. Republican Minority Whip Roy Blunt of Missouri said that Congress has no business interfering in military strategy. And as others did, he also hearkened back to Vietnam.
President Johnson was criticized a generation ago and still today for choosing bombing sites in Vietnam. He was the commander-in-chief, yet he should have left that those tactical choices to the military. But his actions made infinitely more sense than this. It's hard to imagine a group less capable of making tactical decisions about specific troop deployments than 535 members of Congress. The resolution today is about the exact number of troops. Will the one tomorrow or next week be a vote on which block in Baghdad to target or which car to stop? And of course, today what we debate is a tactic in the greater fight we're in. The new commanding general has determined this surge is the right course of action. The Iraq study group was supportive of, quote, a short-term redeployment or surge of American combat forces to stabilize Baghdad or to speed up the training and equipping mission if the U.S. commander in Iraq determines that such a step would be effective.
That's Republican Whip Roy Blunt of Missouri. The Democratic congressman from Missouri, who chairs the Armed Services Committee, Ike Skelton, said that Congress is not interfering. Skelton said it's exercising a right and taking responsibility.
This is a great American tragedy. The mission of this Congress is to urge the change of course. We're here today because of a series of irretrievable strategic mistakes. Let's understand the goal of this resolution. Number one, to fully extend our support to those in uniform in the United States. Being on the Armed Services Committee now through the years and more recently as chairman, I cannot tell you how proud I am of those who are in uniform, whether they be deployed in the Middle East or somewhere else on the globe or here in our country. We must let them know, and this resolution does let them know, that we fully support them as well as their wonderful families. The second part of this resolution deals with the presidential decision to increase our troops by 21,500. However, it's not clear what support troops are needed. The Pentagon says 2,500 support troops. The Congressional Budget Office says 13,000 minimum. But whatever it is, we find ourselves not seeing a change in strategy as was promised by the administration and the White House, but just another tactic that had been used before, an increase in troops.
That's Representative Ike Skelton, Democrat of Missouri. And there lies the key division between those in favor of the proposed Iraq resolution and those opposed. Is the troop increase a mistake? Those favoring the resolution believe it is, and they think the U.S. can meet its international and domestic obligations without more troops in Iraq. Those opposed see the resolution as a sign of weakness that enemies of the U.S. will seize upon in a generations-long war of civilizations. NPR's Washington editor Ron Elving is with us in the studio. And Ron, is there any doubt that the House will pass this non-binding resolution expressing disapproval for the troop increase in Iraq?
There doesn't seem to be any doubt. It will come as a tremendous shock if all the Democrats, save a handful, very small handful, one or two or three, don't vote for it. And it will come as a great surprise if there isn't a substantial minority within the minority that also votes for it. So we're guessing at this point that something like 255 or 260 members of the House are going to vote for this resolution. It only takes 218 to have a majority. So that does not seem to be the big question mark here. A larger question mark would be what happens when it moves over to the Senate and they're still more or less caught in irons and not able to decide even which resolution language they want to have their debate on, because nothing could get enough votes to cut off debate on the Senate floor.
So we have really no idea when any action might occur in the Senate.
Yes, we have no idea. It's possible that there will be never a resolution debate of the kind we're seeing in the House, or it's possible it could take on the form of an amendment to some other must-pass bill like a budget bill, and then it could bring about the debate at some later juncture.
What struck you overall about today's debate in the House? Was there sort of an overarching sense or theme that you detected?
I was struck by the prevalence of the rhetorical question. There were many, 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 many speakers whose entire presentation seemed to consist of one rhetorical question after another, and particularly among the Republicans. What happens if we leave? What about finishing the job? What will our troops think? How will our troops feel? Again and again, this was the device that was used. It was not necessarily possible to answer any of these questions. That's the nature of a rhetorical question. But that was the device of choice. It seemed to be to poke a certain amount of uncertainty into what on the Democratic side was a more or less relentless march of the same facts, the same polls, the same election results, the same discouraging numbers from Iraq, and the conjuring of the picture we all have of death and destruction in Baghdad.
There was a lot of throwing about of numbers today during the debate. What is the real number of the troop surge in Iraq, to your understanding?
Combat troops, it appears to be 21,500, although that may be flexible by a few hundred in one direction or another. The CBO, Congressional Budget Office, has said that if you're going to send another 21,500, you're going to have to send something in the neighborhood of 25,000 more support people. That can be disputed back and forth. So some people, I know over in the Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, routinely refers to a 48,000 troop surge in Iraq as opposed to 21,500. So the term combat troops is used in the resolution, and I think that that's the operative term.
And briefly again, what may be in store for tomorrow? Do we expect that we'll hear from some Republicans, perhaps, who are in favor of this resolution, and will they speak out loudly?
The Democrats are hoping to put forward early in the day a number of Republicans who will say they're for the resolution. It will only be a fraction of the number we expect to actually see vote for the resolution, but of course it's much more of an outward act for a member who is going against the wishes of his leadership and his White House and the majority of the members from his party to actually make a speech on the floor in these dramatic conditions, as opposed to simply making his vote.
I notice President Bush has been studiously avoiding the debate. I think, speaking with C-SPAN, according to NPR's Brian Naylor, he said he didn't know when they were debating it, and he had a pretty busy day today.
Pretty busy day, lots to do, and the world doesn't necessarily stop just because Congress does its duty. That's what the president said.
We'll have more from the debate in the House of Representatives tomorrow. Ron Elving, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Paul.
This has been a special report from NPR News on the first day of the House debate on its Iraq War resolution. This program was edited by Martha Wexler. It was produced by Giselle Grayson with help from Katie Dunn. I'm Paul Brown. Our engineer was Bill Deputy, and our director was Gwen Uten. This is NPR News.